It's good to be back. Had an interesting time in California. Some of the highlights for me, had a chance to go to the Los Angeles Temple for a few sessions. New Temple president, Richard Stratton, is a friend of mine, so I showed up for the beginning session of the day, and he seeing me there invited me up to give the opening prayer. They have a chapel special meeting for the temple workers and whatnot at the beginning of the day. So that's the first time I ever had that privilege, and of course that felt good. And then he took us to see some of the rooms of the temple we usually don't go to. I got to see the baptismal font of the Los Angeles Temple, and also the upper room that all temples have, where there is at one end of the large assembly hall a rostrum and stand for the Melchizedek priesthood, and on the other end for the Aaronic priesthood. I've seen that in the Kirtland Temple, but I've never seen it in any of the active temples that are being used today. There are some other things. He took me to eat at the Los Angeles Country Club. Now that was really an event. That's supposed to be about the fanciest country club in the land, and it is. It's elegant. It's not, you know, it's not, well, you could use the words posh and things like that, but it's not. It's just elegant. It's like, well, you feel like you're a king, you know, or a queen or somebody dining in this royal place. The grounds are just the Garden of Eden, and what they serve you, absolutely the best, and you eat with sterling silver, and you're waited on hand and foot. Never eaten before like that in my life. Quite an experience. Probably won't again.
Give you enough to eat.
Fruits, they had every fruit they must grow on this earth, and strawberries, the largest I've ever seen in my life. The main thing I did while I was down there was attend meetings of the American Society of Manufacturing Engineers and attend a tool show. Now, once a year in Los Angeles, usually once a year, they have what they call a West Tech Tool Show. This is a place where the latest machinery, machine tools they're called, are shown off. There'll be thousands of exhibitors as a rule. And the latest thing in lathes, milling machines, punch presses, grinding machines, all that kind of stuff will be there. And they'll have millions of dollars worth of that stuff on exhibit, all of it running in operation so that you can see it. I always get a kick out of going to those things. I enjoy seeing that kind of stuff, but rarely can buy much of it because some of those machines they sell nowadays will cost, well, some of the really fancy ones will cost $1 million. I did see one thing that was new to me that I bought that cost about $1,000. Now, some of you fellows will be acquainted with milling machines. What a milling machine is like, you know what a drill press is? You pull down the handle and the drill comes down and goes through the piece of steel or wood or whatever you're drilling. Well, a milling machine is a fancy version of that in which you can not only drill, but you have cutters which can cut in metal. You can drill counter bores in holes, and you can run a slot through metal, take metal, and if it's that thick and you only want that thick, it can mill that down. And a common milling machine in a school's machine shop would be this Bridgeport. The best picture I could find was right here. It's not very good because it's all in red, but this top part up here is like the top of the drill press, you see. This is a milling cutter. It looks a little bit like a drill. If you cut a drill flat on the bottom, it's something like that. And here's a table which can move across that way for the work that you're trying to do on it. And then there's a crossbeam that goes this way. Now over here you'll see a handle that you turn. And you'll see several of those handles on a milling machine, and some of you have used these in shops, so you know what I'm talking about by going in a little more detail, because some of you have not. Now, if you want to drill a hole at a certain place in a piece of metal, you crank this dial across to where you want to drill a hole. You have this longitudinal feed and you have the cross feed. So you put the hole right where you want. And in most machining practice nowadays, you do things to within 1/1000th of an inch of being the correct place. And you can do that with a milling machine. But now, here's a kind of a problem with the ordinary machines that are in shops, like a school shop. This handle that you turn is graduated in 1/1000ths of an inch. And you turn the handle around once, and it comes back to the starting place. And you've moved the table 2/10ths of an inch. One turn is 2/10ths of an inch on all milling machines. So if I drill a hole here, and then I want a hole 20 inches over there in exactly the right place, I start turning the handle and I start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How many times do I have to turn the handle to get over there?
A lot.
100 times. And what usually happens before you get your 100 turns over there? Somebody said something to you, or the phone rang, and so you back it off, and then you start counting again. Well, that happens several times, and finally you think you made it over there. And so you make a mark on the machine and say, I better check that out, because I've already done $100 worth of work on this thing I'm building, you know, and I don't want to drill my hole in the wrong place. So you crank it back and you start over again. And you get interrupted a few times. Finally, you get over there a second time and you decide, well, I've hit that place twice, so I'll assume that's the right place and I drill my hole. Well, now, you know, we went over and saw that milling machine of Brother
Simonson
was demonstrating to us. So that was a milling machine, you know. But that one was really automatic, wasn't it? It had the computer control, and it would go over to the right place all by itself if you punched in the right information in the computer. Well, now, that's an expensive kind of a thing, though. That total assembly there, I guess, is worth around $10,000. Now, if you get a really fancy one on a really good milling machine, you're easily talking $50,000. Well, now, even that fancy one that Brother Simonson was using, and which you fellows used, to write your names in that block of wood, its accuracy depends on what's called the lead screw. Now, you know what a screw is. It has this spiral thread on it. Now, almost all milling machines and lathes and all machine tools will have a so-called lead screw in it. Now, the principle is the same. It's just an ordinary screw, that spiral groove. And when you turn the crank, you see there's a nut. And as you turn the crank, it pulls things through that nut and moves the thing along. The lead screw usually has a square thread, a special lead screw thread, and it's built very accurately and can, on an ordinary machine like the one that Brother Simonson had, which is similar to this Bridgeport, locate in 20 inches within about 3/1000ths of an inch. But you prefer to do that to 1/1000th of an inch over that distance. But most ordinary lead screws cannot be built accurately enough to do that. Well, now there's a new thing. I think it's newer than I, or it was, we've had it for a few years, but it was new to me. Of not depending on the lead screw for your position, but depending on light to indicate your position. Now, there are two kinds. There's a relatively inexpensive kind that depends on light. And this positioning by means of light, rather than the mechanical thing of a lead screw, was brought into being at the time I'm going to talk to you about by the Bausch & Lomb Company. What they did was take a piece of glass up to about 30 inches long for a milling machine like we were using at Brother Simon's. It's about 30 inches long. And with a photographic process, they engrave on that glass for a length of 30 inches, 500 fine lines per inch, very accurately, for the full 30 inches. Mm. Now, then they take an electronic system, which consists of four little detectors that can detect light. And they're lined up accurately on top of what is called a vernier. Now, some of you have used vernier scales and vernier calipers. Again, fine divisions on glass made with one more division in an inch than the 500. 501 divisions. Now, with a combination of these four photo detectors and this thing called a vernier, it goes along that other scale for the full 30 inches, and by means of light, can tell us the position to within 0.2 of an inch. Well, now I bought one of these things for my milling machine because at the show they were having a big discount. Now, it happened to be this brand. I got it for around $1,100. Now what this does, this is the thing that is guided by light, so to speak. This thing that Bausch & Lomb builds. And so now I crank it all right. But instead of looking at the dial, which is divided in inches, I look over at this display. And I can very fast read off anything I want. I can crank over there real fast the 20 inches and be right on without any danger of losing my count. Furthermore, I can do the same in the X direction and the Y direction. And that milling machine we're using to put our names in was an XY milling machine. Furthermore, since we're switching to the metric system now, I don't have to calculate. I flip a switch and it gives me a metric reading or an inch reading, all for around $1,000 and an accuracy to a tenth of an inch, and I don't have to depend on the mechanical thing of my lead screw anymore. A tenth of an inch, sorry. Now, that's pretty good, around $1,000. You go over to the Hewlett-Packard booth at the show, and they have another thing, a guided by light thing for machine tools, but this time it's a laser interferometer. This is in effect an ordinary light interferometer. This thing will position the machine tool accurately within a millionth of an inch, but it gets up to a cost of something like $20,000 versus the $1,000. Well, an interesting thought went through my head as I contemplated these new ideas, which I hadn't run onto until I went to this machine tool show. Here we've been doing things since the beginning of machine tools back in the 17th century, possibly before that, Leonardo da Vinci really invented and had sketches of a lot of modern day machine tools, almost all the principles, but they didn't ever build them in his day, but he had the ideas. But we've gone from mechanical arrangement, which is slow and tedious and with which you can make errors, to actually guiding our machine tools by light. And I thought, look at all the things that are in the scriptures about us and our guidance. Don't we always say do it by light? The light of the gospel, the spirit of truth and light. And we've been talking in several lessons about the Holy Ghost and using it to guide us in our lives in various ways and to serve as a comforter and to be used to discern things. Well, I think in all the scriptures, I wouldn't be one to say that the Lord uses light to do these things. He uses the word, but it may be something that's beyond light. Light is within our understanding. I would concede that there are many things that we do not understand that the Lord knows, but perhaps, this is the kind of thinking that's going through my mind, perhaps the Lord has used the word light as the closest approach to a good description of what can be done for us by the Holy Ghost. Because man has constantly been using better and better things for guidance and for making measurements, which is a form of discernment. And the final ultimate thing he is up to using today is light. We don't even use the standard meter in Paris anymore as our standard of length. You know, they had a platinum ruler, so to speak, located in an archive in Paris, certain length. And we arbitrarily said that is 1 meter long. And anybody who makes a ruler of any kind, be it a yardstick or an inch ruler or a metric ruler of some kind or a machine tool such as a lathe, has ultimately gone back to that ruler in Paris as being the standard. But we need do that no longer, because man has now set light as his standard of length. If you take certain atoms and heat them, they become what a chemist would call ionized, and they emit light of a certain wavelength. And the wavelength of that light, which is an ultimate standard, more accurate than that meter could possibly be in Paris, is the thing we take for our standard of length. So light has become our guiding thing in measurement and in machines. I have a letter I'd like to read to you that David Free has sent to reform. Who's that? He said we can even look at his picture and you can laugh all you want. Says it's all right. Reminds me of when I went to boot camp for the first time.
Oh, my hat.
Shave you off like a duck. Make you look about as ugly as you could possibly look. Well, now listen to this. This letter is addressed to all of us. Dear fellow priesthood holders, I'm past the first week of basic training, and I'm now a dorm chief. I'm in charge of about 50 men, ranging from 17 to 30 years. It's a tough job and a lot of yelling, running back and forth, and getting yelled at by the training instructor when everybody screws up. It's a lot of responsibility, it takes prayer, and it's especially hard to keep from swearing. I know all about that. I was in the armed services once myself. The funny thing is, when the instructor is gone and I'm in charge, I tell them when they can smoke. They used to say when I was in the Navy, a silly expression, the smoking lamp is now lit. I don't know what they say nowadays, but the smoking lamp is lit, then you could smoke. It's not very often. People go crazy without being able to smoke. Keep the word of wisdom, it's wise. I have found contact with the church. I'll start going next week. People hate this place, and I don't blame them, but I like it, at least some of it. The same thing for breakfast every day is sickening. You can't tell your mom you don't like that. Please give me toast today. We stand at attention all the time. Just about everybody wishes they hadn't enlisted. Going to sleep at 10 p.m. and getting up at 5 a.m. is no fun. Then you have to get up at 3 a.m. for KP until 7:30 at night when you're on KP duty. Also, some guys every night get less than that for pulling guard duty for 2 hours during the night. Yeah, well, that's not much sleep. Then 35 push-ups, then run a mile, do 50 sit-ups and a few other things, and it starts to get to you. We've had one person medically discharged and 3 in the hospital. I encourage you all to go on missions. I'm gonna read that one again. I encourage you all to go on missions. I think I will when I get back. I'll have a lot of interesting experiences to tell when I get back. If you'd like to write a note, go ahead. My address is... Some of you guys take down his address and write him that note.
We have a card.
Already been back.
Yeah, he has a note on his letter. He says, try hard to squeeze it in.
Why, heck, where is he?
We don't know that yet.
That's top secret.
That F is the theme of it.
It doesn't matter which line these go on. I don't know if it works. I'm using it.
Hey, pass the paper.
I have one of those. All black patches.
Hey, Tick, hey, put that thing in half.
Signed, Bill Merrill.
Let me say a word about David. I think that we could talk about David a little bit in love and understanding without embarrassing things too much. One thing you should know about David, he's been my neighbor for a number of years, and I've liked him. David is an adopted boy. His parents didn't want him. Lori and Myrtle Joy Free would love took this young rascal into their homes. He's pretty wild when he was young.
He was young.
You should have known him when he was younger. But
didn't you replace a lot of glass in that greenhouse? You replaced a lot of buttons and chairs.
Yeah. Well, I think David's come a long ways. I've been rather proud of the way he's shaped up in many respects in recent years. But what our lessons are starting to turn to, we've had three lessons on spiritual things, the Holy Ghost, trying to become more spiritual in our lives, and now they're starting to turn towards being your brother's keeper and missionary work. That's the next sort of thing that will be coming into our lessons. Now, I can't help think of the many times that our leaders from Salt Lake City have told us that probably the best missionary work that we can do is to do the missionary work with our own members, right in our own backyard. And when you see the statistics on the Aaronic Priesthood members who have become adults and who are not have not honored their priesthood so that they can become Melchizedek priesthood leaders and the kind of leaders in their homes that they should be, you can see that there's a very fruitful field here. Now one day at the dinner table, we were talking about missionary work in our family, and somehow we hit on the idea of figuring out how much it had cost the Hall family to convert one mission, one person into the church. And I don't put this kind of statistic down for any other reason except that I think it can make us think. Now, Charlene went on a mission to Germany. Tracy Jr. went on a mission to Northern Germany. Charlene was Southern Germany. David went on a mission to Australia and Virginia to Scotland. And all these missions are hard. It's difficult to get converts there. But each convert cost $2,000. Now, that's something, isn't it? We pay $2,000 for a convert. Now, I would never begrudge that money because you know that's not the benefit of that. Some of those converts will stay in, they'll have children, and eventually there may be thousands of people you see members of the church. To say nothing of the growth that Charlene and David, Tracy and Virginia, receive from being out there doing this kind of work. But I think it points up the fact that for a lot less effort than $2,000, we can, in a sense, gain a convert. We can help David free, you know. Make our own people converts. All of us, even though we're born and raised in the church, we have to become converts at some stage. And what I'd like to suggest is that I hope a couple of you will take this as a serious assignment. It won't cost you any $2,000. It's going to cost you a half an hour of your time this afternoon. Now write old David a letter. I'm sure it'll make him feel good. And maybe it'll be a help. It could even be a turning point in a man's life. You never know what good might be done by something that simple as writing a little note. That's all I ask for. You know, he said it in a kind of an interesting way here in the letter. Go ahead and write me one if you want to. Here's my address. That means to me he'd like to have one. He really would like to have one. So why don't we do that? So I've written down some scriptures here for those of you who brought your scriptures. They have to do with ideas along the line of am I my brother's keeper in the main? And of helping one another. I'm sure that all of us recognize more and more as we grow older that we alone cannot make the grade. And that we indeed are our brother's keeper. And our whole job in the gospel is to reinforce one another and to help each other. And to, if somebody is obnoxious and hard to get along with and seems to be going his own way, to not give up on him. Golly, if we're going to spend $2,000 to go way out, a long ways away and try to get a convert, with a lot less than that, we can get our converts right here at home. And furthermore, if we can succeed in doing that before we're called on our missions, then when we do go on our missions, we'll probably be a lot more effective because we will have had the experience of helping one another, building up one another, and influencing each other for good right here at home. I think I'd like to read. I think all we have time to read. Well, maybe not. Let's see. Genesis 4 and 9 is simple and interesting. I think you know what it is. The first time that the subject of being a brother's keeper came up. And the Lord said unto Cain, where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? It was interesting this morning, a little bit we had going with Brent over there. Welcome, Brent, our quorum. We appreciate having you. You know, we're just battering back and forth a little bit. The patient says, where's your dad? And Brent says, why my father's keeper? Let's get over to the one in Matthew 25:31. Thank you. Somehow or other, my marker seems to get out of the place where it's supposed to be. There are several verses that are along this idea, beginning with 31 in Matthew 25. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. There's a huge painting in the Washington, D.C. temple on the main floor showing the Savior with the righteous on the one side and the unrighteous on the other side in despair, symbolism separating the sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer, and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Now that can be interpreted spiritually as well as physically. And I hope that we'll use some of this light for guidance that's available from our Father in Heaven and apply it right here in our own backyard to those who could use and who need our help in a spiritual way. There are some members of our quorum that we could help. Sometimes we get rebuffed. I made a recent attempt myself lately, probably did it all wrong, but I'll try again. Try to activate some of those who are not so active in our quorum. Any of you have any comments that you'd like to make? I seem to do all the talking most of the time. Happy to have any comments on this subject from any of you. Rob?
I think that all of us should work towards getting David Duke back into the corner.
He was here last week.
Yeah, I know.
And I think we can get him to come back.
You know, he's coming this Tuesday.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, for the tournament.
He said he would, but I don't know.
He came Tuesday, but he just stayed momentarily, wasn't that it?
Yeah, but he'll probably be out as fast as he can.
No.
Who lives over time? Pick him up on their way.
Doug.
Yeah, but you shouldn't pick him up.
Yeah.
Pick him up on the way.
Bishop,
I couldn't help but think of a time when I was in the service, when you were suggesting we write David. When I went into the Army, I went down to Fort Mooney in California and was there only about a week and a half, and got a kind of a skin allergy that put me in the hospital, and I got in with about 15 guys that I knew. And the time I got out of the hospital, I had missed my training session and was thrown into another outfit where I didn't know a single person. And I also, because of having my outfit changed, all of my mail got sidetracked for about 4 weeks. And because I wasn't with my regular unit, I was just sort of in limbo for 4 days, and three of those 4 days I pulled KP just because they figured I didn't have anything else to do. And that KP is like David said, from 3 in the morning until, you know, 8 or 10 at night. And there had never been a time in my life when I was so low as that period of my life. And I kind of sensed David feeling a bit of that when he talks about up early, to bed late, KP, when he talks about running a mile, for training. I couldn't help but feel a little bit of what David's feeling and remember my experience. And one letter would have made the difference. I got feeling so low that I finally wrote to folks, and I was really a cut to them. I said, I assume that everybody's well back there. I haven't heard from you, and I guess it doesn't matter. I was really bitter. And you can get that way. And I have an idea. A few letters. Mine go a long ways with David.
Thanks, Bishop. Any other comments from the class? Merrill, turn the time back to you.
Any other business, Bishop?
Who's going to make contact with David? David did. Who'd like to give it a try, maybe? That's the way to ask.
Like what? What do you have in mind?
For Tuesday. For Tuesday, to pick him up and...
What are we doing Tuesday?
Ping pong tournament.
Did you tell me about that?
Yeah.
You know he won't come unless somebody goes out of their way.
Well, I'd pick him up, but I'll be late.
You're not so long to do it. Then,
yeah. Does he play ping pong?
Yeah.
Probably as well as most of them.
Well, he's not saying much, Bishop.
I know. Ray, you want to make contact with him?
I don't know.
I think to just leave it open, nothing will happen. So
how's it going to be set up Tuesday?
We have the cultural hall,
and we just ping pong tables.
A whole bunch of ping pong tables, and
we'll have the refreshments.
With the breakdown we got today, we'll have a tournament roster.
I'm just wondering, should it be somebody that lives by and says, I'll pick you up on the way? Anything better?
I'll call them.
Then, I'll do it.
There are two ways. Either somebody that lives by him and can pick him up and it looks natural, I'm on my way, I'll stop by for you. Or somebody that's had some exchange with him before and he's responded to that. It can be either one.
I'll bring him.
Okay.
I'll get him out.
Well, why don't you work with Ray and the two of you put it together?
Yeah.
Because you had a contact with him in the past, haven't you? Maybe the two of you, you can pick Rick up and go drop by his house on your way. Guys, it's a crazy thing. Did any of you see Glenn Gallier this morning?
Yeah.
Gospel can be a great thing in your life, guys, especially if you've been with God at all. And some of you you need to stop and think. What would you be without it? And then that's David, see? That's David, and you ought to be interested in getting it back into his life. So he feels like you do. So he has the comfort, the peace of mind that you have being in the church.
Isn't he a teacher at all? What would he do?
Yeah, but we don't say anything about that because he's of an age to be in our choir.
Oh yeah, I know, but when it starts coming to our things, and then what do you do? Then you have to say, okay, well, you're a teacher now. You got to start participating with the teachers because.
No, he doesn't. He does everything with us, and time he's ready to worry about taking assignments, we're going to hope he's ready to ordain the priest to take him. So. Now, he's probably a member of our choir, but it's our responsibility to go to work on it. And it's true, until he is active and living the gospel, he can't be ordained a priest and he can't function in the priesthood. But, that first step is making him feel like he's at home. Those things pretty well take care of themselves. Take Glenn again. He's old enough to be an elder. And he's working towards that. And he's a prospective elder. See, he's going in the elder's quorum because he's only a priest. And he can't function as an elder, but he's going in the elder's quorum and working to where he can be ordained an elder. It works all right. I think you'd be a lot less comfortable working with the teachers than with us.
Oh, yeah.
This is how it works. And it's good to ask the questions because you need to understand how it works.
Okay, Tom, sit closer here. All right, Great Heavenly Father, we thank you. We could come to priesthood meeting this morning and learn something about thy light and how we can live by it to make our decisions by using with its help. Please help us that we'll be able to help fellowship both Davids and befriend them and make them more close to us. These things we send in Jesus Christ's name.